Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, September 6th, 2014. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Reports say police are harassing displaced Chingwizi villagers who were recently allocated plots at Nwanetsi Ranch after they were stranded at a temporary shelter in Masuko province due to lack of funds.
We now have instructions from the client for us to issue out letters of intention, of notice of intention to sue the police. So any time from now, we'll be dispatching those letters to the Minister of Home Affairs.
Observers say the government should take stern measures against the National Social Security Authority officials for failing to properly administer pension funds. And the Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency, or ZIMSTATS, says about 20 couples are divorcing in the country's second capital city per week.
It's primarily because of the general breakdown in the social fabric, the social moral fabric, such that families and people, married people and unmarried people in general, are no longer valuing the institution of marriage.
Reports say police are harassing displaced Chingwizi villagers who were recently allocated plots at Nwanetsi Ranch after they were stranded at a temporary shelter in Masuko province due to lack of funds. Attorney Kennedy Masie of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says the situation might get out of hand if it is not stopped, as the villagers feel that the police are overstepping their authority. Some of the villagers claim that the police are terrorizing them at their new home. Police in Masuko province declined to discuss this issue. Masie tells Studio 7 he has been instructed by some of his clients to take the matter to court.
The clients are actually complaining of harassment where they have been allocated, and plus there's a certain gentleman in the PS office of lands in Masingo who's actually working in cahoots with other villagers who were actually volunteers who initially went to the places they were allocated the land. So these particular clients of ours are actually being intimidated, and it's more like a ploy of trying to force them out of the community. And also there are still issues regarding to the assaults that were meted by the police, which are still outstanding, and the state is yet to give us a report on that.
So are you taking any legal action on some of these issues?
Yes, we now have instructions from the client for us to issue out letters of intention, of notice of intention to sue the police. So any time from now, we'll be dispatching those letters to the Minister of Home Affairs and to the Commissioner General so that they know our intention towards the actions by the police.
What are the chances of succeeding in that kind of case?
This one is a peculiar case. The chances are quite high. This is an issue whereby it was an open assault, and it's on record that the clients were actually assaulted by the police, and it's just an issue of just following due process. And we have names of some of the police officers who actually were involved in the alleged assault and torture of these villages. So it will actually make our job much easier, because if we win the case in court, you cannot execute against the minister. But if we have the names of the police officers, we can actually go for them in their personal capacity.
That was human rights lawyer Kennedy Masie speaking with Studio 7 from Chiretsi, Masuko province. Provincial government officials declined to comment. Over 20,000 villagers were displaced by floods early this year and were moved to Chingwizi camp before they were forcibly ferried to Nwanetsi Ranch.
We know countries like Zimbabwe do not currently have problems with the Ebola virus, but just in case, here is how you can prevent the Ebola virus from spreading. Avoid physical contact with people showing symptoms, that is, continuous high fever, red eyes, vomiting, and stomach ache. Wash hands thoroughly and frequently, including under the fingernails. Use soap and clean water. Use gloves when taking care of infected patients. cook all animal food and byproducts thoroughly, avoid bush meat, wear protective clothing and gloves when handling animals, and do not touch anyone who has died from Ebola.
Observers say the government has to take swift action to rectify problems bedeviling the running of pension schemes in Zimbabwe. They say the state should come out with stringent policies to protect pension funds, as retirees complain that they are getting a pittance or nothing at all after leaving work. Researcher and policy analyst Butler Tambo of the Policy and Research Institute of Zimbabwe tells Studio 7 the fresh policies should tighten screws on pension executives abusing public funds.
One blame is also on the pension fund themselves. Then the second one is also on the individuals who have failed to invest.
Is there any way that this situation can be addressed?
Let's take the issues of places like maybe NASA and where there is most corruption. At least if corruption can be removed and the proper investment policies can be put up, I think we need a situation whereby those who are failing to make investment, good investment decisions on behalf of pension funds, I believe those people should simply be fired, right? And then at least if there is an, people need to be educated now on how they can invest the little that they are getting. Because sometimes it's not about earning much money that brings about prosperity or a better life. But it's for those who are currently earning something, right, who are currently working, for them to make the proper investment decisions. For instance, if these people can, if platforms can be created, or platforms can be created where they are taught how they can invest the little that they have. And if they can invest properly the little that they can have, after retirement, these people can be able to live a reasonably or a fair lifestyle.
It was researcher and policy analyst Butler Tambo of the Policy and Research Institute of Zimbabwe. Some pensioners are getting as low as $20 a month. Their pensions were eroded by hyperinflation, which, according to the International Monetary Fund, hit 500% in 2008.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
The Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency, or ZIMSTATS, says about 20 couples are divorcing in the country's second capital per week. According to a ZIMSTATS report released recently, there were only 5 divorces a week during the same period last year. The national agency could not give reasons about the specific reasons for the spike in divorce cases. For perspective, Studio 7 is Chris Gander, Minister of Religion, Angela Cala Sibanda.
It's primarily because of the general breakdown in the social fabric, the social moral fabric, such that families and people, married people and unmarried people in general, are no longer valuing the institution of marriage. The institution of marriage is generally under threat, probably sometimes in some cases due to the misinterpretation or the misunderstanding on the gender and the women's rights campaigns. So, as well as the economic factors within the country.
But what about, if we compare the situation today and that of the past, what do you make of the differences in the institution of marriage?
In the past, people used to value marriage and divorce was a taboo. However, there were also challenges with that system because people would then stay within marriages that are oppressive, within marriages that are abusive. Notwithstanding, though, what's happening now is another extreme end where people are then have just lost the value of marriage, probably some due to the globalization, the changes in the social values and norms and traditions. Probably that have led to this paradigm shift in the way people are viewing the institution of marriage, such that you now have so many of these commercial sex workers where men can simply go and quench their sexual thirst out there without real commitment. And you also have young men who tell you plainly that I would rather have go out there and quench my thirst with a commercial sex worker than to have to be in a committed in a relationship, a long-term relationship where I will where that will have cost implications. So there are all those dynamics within the society that are threatening the institution of marriage.
That was Minister of Religion Angela Calaspanda speaking with Studio 7's Chris Kande from Bulawayo. It's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at women's issues hosted by Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Today we are going to carry on with the interview we had last week with the Deputy Minister of Sports, Mrs. Tabetha Kanengoni Malinga. Today she will take us through some of the initiatives that are being done by her party, ZANU-PF, to also make sure that young women are involved in political leadership roles. Welcome again to the program, Deputy Minister Tabetha Kanengoni Malinga.
Thank you.
Deputy Minister, tell us a little bit about some of the initiatives your party, ZANU-PF, is making towards including young women in positions of influence.
Cabinet ministers and deputies are chosen from a pool of members of parliament. So the first step towards that happening is for someone to be an MP, which means you have to represent a constituency. And then in order to have the qualifications to be chosen as a minister, you have to be educated, you have to meaning degree and above, and have some kind of experience in whatever relevant field according to the ministries that we have. So before we even start talking about getting into cabinet, we have to look at how to get women into the lower structure. The first port of call is getting them into parliament, getting them to be able to represent constituencies. I like what happened this time around. There was a very good initiative to get more women in parliament where they the Women's League pushed for a women's quota, 60 women who get into parliament and they don't have to contest with men. And then there was also a push to have the current constituencies that were being run by women contested by women only, so women contest other women. I thought that was a really, really great initiative, and they did it for the first time, and I feel it worked, because if you look at parliament right now, we have a lot more women in parliament than we ever have had. Now, what now needs to happen is, if, according to our new constitution, women's quota parliamentarians are only going to be there for 2 terms, which means after this term, it doesn't necessarily mean the women that are there now will run 2 terms consecutive. They still have to be voted back in. But the rule will be there for 2 terms. Then after that, everyone has to compete fair and square, which means in the next 10 years, we need to make sure that we are grooming young women, young educated women who can come in and compete and be able to get resources for them, get them more resources, well-trained, to be able to contest in constituencies and actually start working now towards that, so that by the time we get to 2018 or the term after that, we have a large number of young women that are ready and prepared to go and contest, not only against their fellow young women or older women, but against men.
Take us through the day of a young female minister like yourself. What do you get up to? Just walk us through your normal day-to-day activities.
As Tabitha, I'm married, I have a child, so I have many, many responsibilities. So my first section of responsibilities in a day is directed towards my family. When I'm at home, I have to be the wife, I have to be the mom. So first things I do when I wake up is make sure that my family has eaten breakfast and all. I have to make breakfast, make sure my family is eating, make sure my husband is wearing crisp clothes to go to work in, make sure my daughter is fed and all that. And then when I leave the house, I'm no longer mom. I'm now deputy minister. And I go to work and I have to deal with that space. I'm also an MP, so while I'm in the same space of being a deputy minister, I have to deal with my constituency work as well. So it means being on the phone, communicating with people back there, trying to get opportunities for people in my constituency. And our ministry has a lot of activities that happen at night as well. Sometimes after I'm done with work, maybe at about 4 or 5 p.m., my day continues into the evening, where either I have to be a guest of honor at a cultural event or sporting event or something like that.
How would you say you are balancing being a mom
a parliamentarian, a minister. For other women out there, they're also trying to juggle some responsibilities. How would you say you're managing it?
Yeah, I think the right word is juggle. Because it's really juggling. Finding a balance is very difficult. You can have your day diarized, but there's always something that changes. While you're in the middle of a meeting, your child can get sick and you have to leave. Or while you're in the middle of another sporting activity, someone in your constituency will die and you'll need to go and help out there. The best thing you can do is try to stick to a somewhat balanced schedule where you give yourself days for the constituency, give yourself days for to have appointments in your office where people can come in and chat with you. And you can see how much you can help out. Then give yourself time to catch up with your office work and everything. Then also go to your parliament sittings. We have answer questions like on Wednesdays in parliament. It's a juggle, but I think being young also helps because I still have the energy for it. So that's why I think this is also the time to bring in a lot of young, energetic women that can help change the country.
Thank you, Deputy Minister of Arts, Sports and Culture, Tabitha Kanengoni Malinga, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum.
Thank you for having me.
The Women's Forum was hosted by Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.
Thank you very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. And today we have the music of Albert Nyati, dedicated to Sibonile Siziba. Follow us on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and WhatsApp. Our WhatsApp number is 1-202-465-0318.
Cursed world, tell me what honesty is there when you are summoned unto the table to discuss peace. When you are disarmed and suddenly four bullets have to greet you.
Peace, peace, all peace unto the whole world.
But what peace? What justice? Whose peace? Whose justice? How can I be expected to be peaceful where there is no peace? To be just where there is no justice? My friends, my question stood yesterday. My question still stands today. My question shall still stand tomorrow. Ngakoge, we shall stand on his grave, not moaning but singing the war cry. Bulala abathakathi.
Now to recap today's top stories. Reports say police are harassing displaced Chingwezi villagers who were recently allocated plots at Nuanetsi Ranch. Observers say the government should take stern measures against the National Social Security Authority for failing to properly administer pension funds. And the Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency, or ZIMSTAT, says about 20 couples are divorcing in the country's second capital city per week. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gandhi. This is Gibbs Dewey in Washington, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very